Pasandubhyeva Chapati Tanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai. It's very nice to be back here at the temple in Chaupati. And although we're not getting the darshan of their lordships, we're getting darshan of so many wonderful Vaishnavas. So my wife Amekala and I, we're just completing a trip around the world over the last 6 weeks. And a major part of our trip, we stopped in Australia for 3 weeks, and we visited 6 temples there. I hadn't been to Australia since I was with Srila Prabhupada last time in 1975, so this was my first time back there, so it was a very wonderful experience to see so many devotees there, and some of them I remembered from many, many years ago, over 30 years ago, sometimes 35 years ago. I first went there in 1973. And of course, then we stopped just at the temple in Juhu for a few days, but we had to stop here tonight before returning to England to visit Radhanath Maharaj. And I was just telling my wife, I said it was very interesting because Radhanath Maharaj, when he left the West and he stopped, of course, at Bhaktivedanta Manor, and he stayed at in London near the Soho Street Temple. But by his kindness, the last place he stopped on his way to the airport was at our flat in Amekala. She made him some lasagna. And few other things, so we were able to see him before he left, so it was only appropriate that before we went back to England, we stopped here to see Maharaj and all the wonderful devotees here. So I was saying we had this nice trip to Australia, and Prabhupada, he went to Australia many times, I think 4 or 5 times, which we found out going to Australia was actually... Australia is really far away from everywhere. It was a 14-hour flight from here, from Sydney to Bombay was a 14-hour flight. And I thought that was, India was rather close to Australia compared to other places. So it was really very far away. But Prabhupada was so kind and so determined to spread Krishna consciousness all around the world that he visited Australia at least 4 different times. And he went to Sydney and Melbourne and Perth, all different times. And 2 of those times, he carried deities with the devotees from India to Australia. And one of those times, of course, that was when... it was in 1973 when Prabhupada left Calcutta. And he traveled from Calcutta to Bangkok. And then from Bangkok to Sydney. And then the plane stopped in Sydney and he went from Sydney to Melbourne. And on that flight with Srila Prabhupada, myself and Bali Mardan, we carried Radha Krishna deities. So the plane, we had to get off the plane 3 times in that flight from Calcutta to Sydney, Australia. We had to get off in Bangkok and then we got off again in Melbourne or Sydney and then finally in Melbourne. And this was 1973. So the deities, they were this high, marble. Marble, Radha, and Krishna, and their name's Radha Balava. And I remember they were just covered in a cloth, and the deities. And we took them into the airport in Calcutta, and then we took them off the plane. They sat right beside us in the seats. They even had seat belts. They wore seat belts on the plane. So they, and each time we would get off, we would carry them. And then finally, the last time we stopped in Sydney, just before arriving in Melbourne, Prabhupada was sitting down in the chair, and I was sitting next to him, and I had his white bag, and I had Krishna sitting next to me on the chair. And Prabhupada looked, and he said to me, he said, "Krishna, he is very pleased with your service." He said, because it was very difficult, he said, carrying him from India all the way to Australia. He said it was a big austerity. He said, but Krishna is pleased by this service. And when he said that, I actually could understand it. Actually, Krishna was pleased. I didn't know he was. But after Prabhupada said it, then I could understand Krishna was pleased. And I thought, Prabhupada was pleased. And at that moment, I realized how easy it was to make advancement in Krishna consciousness just by pleasing your spiritual master, because he was pleased with this activity, taking some austerity, accepting some difficulty to help spread Krishna consciousness. And just sitting there in the very form of the Lord, Krishna was there. And Prabhupada smilingly said, Krishna, he was happy with this service. So I could see that this Prabhupada made it so easy for us to become Krishna conscious, because he's very easily pleased. Prabhupada, if we just do a little bit of service, Prabhupada would become pleased. And then I know over the last few days, Maharaj, he's been talking about this when he came to Juhu 2 days ago. And at the end of the lecture, I mentioned one story when Prabhupada said in one word how to become Krishna conscious. How you all know that word now, right? Everyone knows. And Prabhupada, when the devotee said, how do I become Krishna conscious? Just as Prabhupada was ready to leave in the car, it was so amazing to see Prabhupada. He was just so wonderful and so intelligent and so expert. So just before I shut the door, he said, desire. So that was it. We just have to have that desire to serve Srila Prabhupada's order. So it was so nice that we were there in Australia, and we happened to be in Melbourne for Gaur Purnima. It just was arranged, and it was very nice. So many devotees were coming, so many local devotees, and so many preaching programs were going on. And on Gaur Purnima evening, by the mercy of Radha Ballava, because I felt some special mercy from them, being able to carry them and bring them there so many years ago. And he reciprocated, and we were able to do Abhishek to Gaur Nitai deities on Gaur Purnima evening, just before the Sundar Artik. So it was very nice. So in keeping with the spirit of Srila Prabhupada's pastimes, I have a few little stories to tell, and some of them you may have heard, but you may not have heard all of them, since they have little more to tell. And this first one was involving Srila Prabhupada again on an aeroplane. And I mentioned when we traveled from Calcutta to Bangkok, which was also a long flight, and Prabhupada knew he had another several hours to go from Bangkok to Australia. So when we got off at the airport in Bangkok, they took all our bags off, and they had to go through customs. So all the bags were just lined up, and we had to be there for 2 hours. So Prabhupada looked at me and he said, "I want to take bath." So I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." He said, "Get me a change of clothes and my towel." So I went into his bag and I found the change of clothes and I got Prabhupada's towel. And then there were only just bathrooms with toilets and sinks. There were no showers. And Prabhupada said, "Never mind." He said, "I need to take bath." So I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." So we went into the bathroom and I had brought Prabhupada's gumshoes. So right in the men's room, it was a very big airport bathroom, 10 sinks, you know, and big room. So Prabhupada went right up near one of the sinks, and he put his gamcha around him with his two hands out front, and dropped his cloth, took off his kurta, and I helped him take off his kurta, and I had his lota with him. So then he just had me fill up the lota, and he just squatted on the floor in front of the sinks. And that people are coming in and out, and they're rolling their suitcases and washing their hands and using the bathroom. And Prabhupada just started taking his bath in the men's room. And he's just splashing about, and the water is flowing all over the floor. So he did this 5, 6, 7 lotas going over him, and attendants at the doorway, and no one's saying anything, and Prabhupada's bathing. And so then he finished and gave him his towel and dried off and helped him. He put his dhoti on, put his kurta on. And then he said, then he just started to walk out the door, and I have all his cloth. And he's as he's walking out, the attendant didn't speak English, and he wasn't speaking Hindi, he was speaking in Thai, and he started saying, mumbling to me. Of course, there's water all over the floor now in the bathroom from Prabhupada, and he said something to me. So as we walk out, I said, Prabhupada, I don't think the attendant is very happy. Prabhupada said, never mind, he said, I was feeling tired, he said, I needed to bathe, he said, and then just walked out. So then we continued on the trip. So Prabhupada was always very transcendental, never cared for any material conventions. And then we just got back on the plane and he felt refreshed. He said, I needed to refresh. So now we're talking in this airplane. Now this trip, they said, this was one of my actually favorite stories because it was so amazing what happened in this. And Prabhupada was traveling from Mexico City. And from Mexico City, he was going to Caracas, Venezuela. And the devotees, one Mataji devotee, lady, she made Prabhupada puffed rice with peanuts, chaunced puffed rice. This was one of Prabhupada's favorite preparations. Huh? We talk about Prabhupada liked puffed rice so much. So she made it very simple, and she put it in aluminum foil and put it in paper bag. So we took it onto the plane, and as I said, Prabhupada, he always sat at the window seat, always sat at the window, and I was sitting next to Prabhupada, and next to myself, Paramahamsa, he was sitting at the aisle. So as soon as the plane takes off, and this was always also, this was the normal situation. The plane would take off, and as soon as the plane was settled, Prabhupada would say, okay, time for prasadam. And Prabhupada liked prasadam very much. So I just opened up this paper bag, and I opened up the aluminum foil, and I put it in front of Prabhupada. And Paramahamsa and I were sitting there. So Prabhupada just started taking, and he would pop it into his mouth, you know, always very nicely, and he would chew. And Prabhupada, when he chewed puffed rice, you could hear it. He would chew very, very well. He chewed his food very well. So he'd take and he'd put it in, munch on it, and he would take. And this way he was enjoying his puffed rice. So then he ate about half of what was there. So then he turned to me and said, okay, now you can take. So, very eager, I put it on my table and I ripped the aluminum foil in half. So I put half on one side and half on the other, and I gave that to Paramahamsa. So Prabhupada's sitting there now, and now Paramahamsa and I were eating very happily our prasadam, or maha maha prasadam from Srila Prabhupada, and we're eating this puffed rice. So there's one young lady walking down, she's the stewardess on the plane. She's worked for Venezuela Airlines, and she walks down and she stops right in front of us. And she doesn't say one word, but she reaches past Paramahamsa onto my plate and she grabs a handful of puffed rice and throws it into her mouth. and eats it. And then she said, looks at me, and she said, oh, this is very good. What is it? And of course, I was very amazed that she just grabbed my food and took Prabhupada's Mahaprasadam. And I said, oh, it's puffed rice, I said. And she said, oh, well, why are you eating this? And I said, well, I said, we're all vegetarian and we all bring our own food. And she said, oh, okay, she said. She said, well, would you want anything else? And I looked at Prabhupada. I said, Prabhupada, would you like anything else? And Prabhupada just said quietly to me, he said, hot milk. So then I said to her, I was like the translator from anyone to Prabhupada. So I said, we'll have hot milk. And she said, okay. She said, I said, we'll all have hot milk. And then she said, would you like anything else? She said, I can go into first class. She said, they have fruit and cheese. She said, would you like anything? So again, I turned to Prabhupada. I said, Prabhupada, would you like anything else? He said, yes, that's okay. He said, fruit and cheese. So I said, well, also, we'll all have fruit and cheese. So then she left, and she comes back in 5 minutes, and she has cups of hot milk for all of us, and she has plates with cut-up fruit and cheese, and she puts it all down. So now we're all having hot milk, fruit, and cheese, and we had our puffed rice, and she leaves. And I turned to Prabhupada. I said, Prabhupada, that was really amazing what just happened, wasn't it? And Prabhupada, he said, oh, he said, women, he said, they have natural desire to serve. You know, this was Prabhupada. He says that in Bhagavatam. For women, he said, very easy to become Krishna conscious because by nature they want to serve. Men, they don't. They want to lord it over. But women, they want to serve. That's by nature. So they're so fortunate. But I'm thinking this woman, because Krishna's in her heart and directed her to take this maha prasadam. I knew that was not a normal activity. No one ever reaches over and takes food from anyone's plate, right? No one does this, except the mother with her son, maybe, you know, that's all. But this was something that was impossible to happen, but somehow Super Soul directed her to take this maha prasadam. So, as I said, this was one of my favorite stories because I knew it was very special. But some 20 years go by and I'm telling this story. And after class, one devotee comes up to me and he said, that was very amazing. And I said, yes, I said it was. He said, well, you know, he said, I'm from South America. He said, and I've gone with my godbrothers, he said, and we go all over the country, he said, and preaching in all the villages, just like in India, there's South America, so many small towns and villages where people live very simple and not near any cities. He said, and we went places, he said, it would take days and days to get to these places by jeeps, he said, and preaching. He said, and we would just go to town centers and we would have kirtan, do Harinam, Sankirtan, and then we just go door to door and knock on the doors, he said, and distribute books. He said, so one day, he said, we were down, he said, and he said, we spent days, he said, in the interior of South America. He said, and I knocked on a door. He said, and the woman opens the door and immediately invites him into the house. He said, and she was a devotee. He said, and this was in the middle of nowhere. He said, this woman had become a devotee and she had deities. And there are pictures on the wall, and she has her bead bag, and she's chanting. He said, so I had to ask, how did you become a devotee? So she said, well, I used to work for an airline. She said, and I met the devotees. She met Prabhupada, and she was the woman that had taken this puffed rice. And now she became a devotee just by taking Prabhupada's remnants. And she was living out in the jungles in South America. But just by that one activity, she became a devotee by Prabhupada's mercy. So this is what Prabhupada did, traveling all around the world. Everywhere I go now, I see it. You know, when Maharaj, when I went to Russia in Moscow to see thousands of devotees, As we were saying, Prabhupada planted one seed, made one disciple there. But he did so much more than that, just by being there, but just by his feet, Prabhupada's lotus feet going all over Red Square, just by seeing, so many people saw Srila Prabhupada, just heard him speaking maybe as he was speaking with Shyama Sundar. All these things, people benefited from this. So I see it more and more that all of us are here because of Srila Prabhupada. So in this case, it was just such an amazing thing. I said, people, I had sometimes devotees, temple presidents, when I would have Prabhupada's plate, and they would say, I'll give you $100. They would say, just give me the whole plate. And I would go, no. And then I would go distribute it to everyone else but them, you know. But we were dying. They would jump on top of one another to get Prabhupada's remnants. And this woman just took it spontaneously. Yeah, so, anyway, and then she became a devotee there in South America. So the other story, which you've probably heard, but you haven't heard all of it, this is a very famous story. It's called Seven Up Story. So I wanted to tell that this evening. And this started also on an airplane. As I said, being on an airplane with Prabhupada was one of the most wonderful things, because Prabhupada, when he was in the temple, you know, we were always a certain way with Srila Prabhupada, and he was always our spiritual master in the acharya, and he would come into the temple room and in his humility and his grandeur. But when he left the temple and he went in his car and he went on the planes and he went into airports, situations could be so different. Just like when the reporters were there, right? Prabhupada would be in the airport. In my book, you'll see there's this one picture with Prabhupada's laughing and looking at me, and we're both laughing because he was talking with this one female reporter. And it had been staged, actually, this sometimes, because Prabhupada, he would speak so strongly in these days, the 70s in America. You know, these were the days of women's liberation. And they didn't care for Prabhupada's views about society and the roles that everyone performed in society. So they had sent a crew, and the woman was a reporter, or the reporter was a woman, the person working the camera was a woman, and the person working, you know, they have the people that just work with the lines. They were all women because they wanted Prabhupada to see that women, they're equal. This was their idea of being equal, was that they could do all the same work as the men. So therefore, they're equal. So immediately, this woman, she's there with her microphone, and she's saying, why do you shave your head? And of course, Prabhupada looked. He said, why do you shave your legs? So again, Prabhupada always knew, just like he could give one word, he always knew exactly what to say, you know. So then he smiled, he said, better to keep a cool head and warm legs. So that was... And another time, Prabhupada, and because they would ask silly questions. Bruto Deva Gane Sarve Gajendra Parashobata Stiya Manu Muni Ganesh Trailokyam Arshayanniva. Atayo, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Indra rode on the back of his carrier, Airavat, surrounded by all the demigods, while all the great sages offered him praise. Thus he shone very beautifully, pleasing the three worlds as he rode off to kill Vritrasura. Text 15, because since this has no purport, we'll read. Vitram abhyadravat chatrum asuranika utapahe pariyastam ojasarajan kruddo rudra ivantakam. Mayukim Parikshit. As Rudra, being very angry at Antaka, Yamraj,
I formerly run towards Antaka to kill him. Indra, angrily and with great force, attacked Vitrasur, who was surrounded by the leaders of the demoniac armies. Text 16. Tata suranam asurai rana paramadaruna treta muke marmadayam abhavat pratami yuga. Thereafter, at the end of Satya Yuga and the beginning of Treta Yuga, a fierce battle took place between the demigods and demons on the bank of the Narmada. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila S. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Herein, the Narmada does not mean the Narmada River in India. The five sacred rivers in India, Ganga, Yamuna, Narmada, Kaveri and Krishna, are all celestial. Like the Ganges River, the Narmada River also flows in the higher planetary systems. The battle between the demigods and the demons took place in the higher planets. The words Pratame Yuge mean in the beginning of the first millennium, that is to say, in the beginning of the Vaisheshvata Manvantara. In one day of Brahma, there are 14 manus who each live for 71 millenniums. The four yugas, Satya, Treta, Dwapara and Kali, constitute one millennium. We are presently in the Manvantara of Vaisheshvata Manu, who is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Umandavashvate yogam proktavanaham yogam vivashvanmani gopraha manu rikshvakave bravit. We are now in the 28th millennium of Vaisheshvata Manu, but this fight took place in the beginning of Vaisheshvata Manu's first millennium. One can historically calculate how long ago the battle took place. Since each millennium consists of 4,300,000 years, and we are now in the 28th millennium, some 120,400,000 years have passed since the battle took place on the bank of the river Narmada. Om Jnana Timiram. Interesting section in the Srimad Bhagavatam, where we see that the demigods are approaching Dadichi Muni for his body, and he first of all he jokes with them because he wants to hear from them the importance of religious principles. But then he himself says that this body is useless, it is to be meant for jackals and wolves. So very happily, for a higher purpose, he relinquishes his body. This is very significant because now today's society we see that this principle is very, very prominent, bodily identification, and wanting to engage this body only for matters of sense gratification. And on Sunday morning we heard a very powerful Srimad Bhagavatam class by His Grace Madan Gopal Prabhu, where he very brilliantly exposed how in modern times people are obsessed. There is a neurotic obsession with this bodily identification. So let us today briefly try to understand this theme in the modern context. Basically, there are three words which are most important in any man's dictionary: I, me and mine. Either gross sense gratification or extended sense gratification. So this identification of the body can be understood at three levels. First is the body, gross body, which is characterized by constant decoration of this body and pursuit of bodily pleasures for enjoyment. And the subtle or extended sense gratification takes place when a person realizes that this body cannot give me as much enjoyment as I want. So then he tries to seek enjoyment through extensions of his body, family, community, or cricket teams. So people think if a particular cricket team wins, they feel they have won the match. So we want to enjoy through others. And lastly, some people also realize that this body is useless, this society is useless, but still that sense gratification is so rampant and so deep-rooted that we start identifying with the ego, that I am the greatest. regarding the body, we have seen in the second canto, Sukadeva Goswami exposes this. This is his first instruction to Parikshit Maharaj. He begins his instruction by explaining how this kind of identification is very, very bad. Nidraya riyate naktam vavaye nachavavaya divacharte hayarajan kutumbha bharanenava. He explains how a person is, this is the first point we are trying to understand today, obsession with the body. So what does a person do because he is obsessed with his body? Nidraya riyate naktam. Night time, he either has sex or what does he do? Nidraya riyate naktam vavaye nachavavaya. He either has sex or he sleeps or both. Nidraya riyate naktam vavaye nachavavaya divacharte hayarajan kutumbha varanenava. And daytime, what does he do? He works hard so that he can feed his own body and the bodies of his family members. And he forgets the goal of life, that is Krishna. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that people have identification with their family, but they don't realize that a person doesn't realize that his father is dead or his father's father is dead. And similarly, his father's father is dead. And similarly, over a period of time, he will die, his son will die, his son's son will die, everybody will die. But still, that obsession with the body is very, very rampant. And this desire to make the body beautiful is very, very tragic. Like one man was telling us that how his wife was telling him, one man we met in the book distribution, he was saying, he was also agreeing with how body identification is very bad. He was saying that how his wife decorates herself with eyebrow, eyelashes, mascara, toner, brush, lipstick, so many other things, he said. And then finally, and she has the audacity to come and ask him, how does this look? Am I looking natural? She asks him. is this good? He was saying this is such a predominant obsession that how I should look. And men also, they will go in the college campuses or when they are walking, everybody feels I am the center of the universe. We see people, when they see a car, they will immediately comb their hair. That is a gross, very gross identification which Sukadeva Goswami is talking about. And the height of this is sex life. Nidraya riyate naktam vavayena chavavaya. Recently there was one professor from New York University who came to Mumbai. He came to India and it was a big news. And this professor has dedicated his life, 50 years of his life, for doing research on understanding the difference between South Indian monkeys and North Indian monkeys. Very deep study he has done. And has come to the conclusion that North Indian monkeys are more volatile, more violent. And finally, he has studied the sexual behavior of monkeys and he has come to India and is received everywhere very nicely. He has come for a seminar on improving sexual relations. It's a world seminar. Can you imagine to such people go and telling them that we are not the body? It is impossible for a person who is so obsessed with this kind of consciousness to understand or to even begin to understand that we have an existence other than this body. We can experience happiness on a higher platform which is beyond this body. I was reading somewhere, Srila Prabhupada writes in one place that for this sense gratification people will work very, very hard. The statement is very classic. Prabhupada says, men work hard like asses so that they can live like pigs. So lifestyle is like that of a pig. Gross sense gratification. But hard work is like that of an ass. Just for a few pieces of bread, people work hard. And how much do these people enjoy? They try to enjoy till the fag end of their life. And the Upanishad explained, Yuvatad Aksharam Gargi Avidit Isma Lokat Pretisa Kripana. One who engages his body for sense gratification without understanding the goal of life, he is called as a miser. Miser is a person who has a lot of money, but he doesn't use it. Similarly, a person is called to be a person with miserly intelligence, when he uses his God-given gift of this human body for mere sense gratification. And this enjoyment goes on, and even at the fag end of life, as the senses are not helping, not supporting, people can't give up this attachment. This is very, very deep-rooted. Deya patya kalatradishu atma saimishu asatsati tesham pramatta nidanam pashyam api na pashyati. The next verse, Shukadeva Goswami says, that deya patya kalatra adishu, attachment to body, wife, home, children. And a person starts thinking, this is my atma sena, this is my army which is going to protect me at the end of life. Atma saimishu, you don't realize that it is asat, it is temporary. And because of this, he becomes too attached, tesham pramatta, and because of this attachment, he cannot see nidhanam, he cannot see his destruction. It's not that he doesn't see, he sees, but he doesn't see. Pashyan api na pashyati. Recently, in the Brahmacharya Ashram, we had put up on the notice board this article from Back to Godhead magazine about this village in Florida, in America, called The Villages. It's a community which advertises people to buy houses after their retirement so that they can live their retired life peacefully, playing golf or swimming or going walking around. All old people in America, they are buying these houses. But most interestingly, or rather unfortunately, this community called Villages has the highest rate of sexual transmitted diseases, more than even Miami and Las Vegas. And 80-85-year-old men are coming with such diseases. It's such a tragic situation where people do not have any understanding about goal of life and wanting to know higher purposes of life. In fact, in this verse, where Prabhupada is writing about Pashyan Apina Pashyati, a person doesn't realize his fall down, Prabhupada writes that we take shelter of fallible soldiers. People are associated with this temporary body. The problem, Prabhupada says, is two things. Not only are they fallible, but secondly, they themselves are bewildered by the material nature. So how can such a person protect? How can such a person help us? And also, some people might argue, no, we are very active, we are doing so many things. Man has conquered space, so many civilizations have come up, we are doing so much. Prabhupada writes in the end of the purport, this is simply like a fish flapping. You see, people are doing so many things, they are so active. Even a fish is active. If you take a fish out of water, it is flapping and it's very hyperactive. But it's soon going to die because it is not in its natural position. Similarly, in this modern society, men are working hard, they are hyperactive, they are doing so many things, but they are like fish out of water. They are suffocating, they are suffering because of the lack of Krishna consciousness. And we also heard that this World Cup is going on now, cricket. And people are so obsessed with the enjoyment spirit that sometimes they are even willing to relinquish their body. Like one man in Bihar is willing to give up his kidney so that he can get the money and go and watch the World Cup in West Indies. Why? Because he knows that I cannot enjoy through this body so much, but when people see others do something, we feel we are doing it. Just like a child, you know, if a child is given a toy or a doll, the child enjoys so much. But if he is hurt, what happens? He will do greatest harm to that doll, to that toy. Or the person you love the most, you beat him only. Like sometimes children, they will beat their mother or father out of anger when their sense gratification is imputed. So people are very attached. What they will go to the extent of sacrificing their body also. They have got such an intense obsession for enjoyment. And when these people in their love, they also let them down, because eventually nobody is going to be superstar forever. When they get so angry that they will carry placards and denounce these personalities and they will burn their refuges. So this is going on in the society today. Therefore, enjoyment on this gross level, bodily sense gratification and external sense gratification, only results in pain. Dukkha yena evati. and why this results in pain, why there is problem, why we cannot enjoy always with this body, because adyantavanta kaunteya, because everything has beginning and end. And therefore intelligent men, na teshu ramate buddha, they do not focus on this bodily enjoyment. Once one lady, she was arguing with Srila Prabhupada. She said, Swamiji, you are discussing Krishna consciousness because that is your interest. Everybody has different interest in life. Like I am interested in economics and you are interested in spirituality, that's all. Prabhupada being very angry. Prabhupada said, you are young and beautiful. Do you want to get old? She said, no, I want to remain young and beautiful. So if you want to remain young and beautiful, can you prevent yourself from going old? She said, no, I cannot. So Prabhupada said, can you prevent yourself from dying? She said, no, I cannot. Can you prevent diseases? She said, no. And then Prabhupada said, then can your economics, which is a subject of your interest, can your study of this subject solve this problem of death? She had no answer to say. The Prabhupada said, it is not a question of interest. It is a question of dire necessity, a desperate necessity. You have to take shelter of spiritual path, Krishna consciousness, and try to transcend these bodily designations. Then, Srila Prabhupada would give the example of, Avisharipa would give the example that when they were in Mayapur, 1975 or 76, in Prabhupada's room, one pigeon would come and make a nest. So Prabhupada saw that the pigeon was making its nest. Prabhupada said, remove all those things. So he removed it. So the pigeon came with the wife and husband. They came. They saw their houses getting destroyed. But he didn't give up. Again, next day, again they started slowly but diligently making that nest, carrying all those pieces of straw systematically. Even Prabhupada saw the endeavor and Prabhupada said, again, remove it. Again, he removed it carefully. But these pigeons didn't give up. They went on trying. Constantly they were trying. Finally, after almost 10-15 days of trying and seeing that somehow we are not getting this house, we are not able to make it, then they eventually gave up. When they gave up, Prabhupada turned to Harishwari Prabhu and said, this is the situation of people in this world. They are seeing that repeatedly Maya is smashing them, material energy is humbling them, but still they will keep trying to make a permanent settlement in this world of death. This is the unfortunate plight of a person who is tesham pramattam idanam pashyan api na pashyati. Because of intense attachment, he cannot see the harsh reality of this world. So this bodily identification, gross sense gratification and extended sense gratification, what is the cause of this? What is the cause because of which this all the sense gratification is limited? It is a time factor. Time destroys everything. So an intelligent person, he understands that all this is going to be vanished. Let me not invest my energy in this. Lord Kapila gives very nice instructions to his mother and he makes this point very emphatically. He explains, Rupa Vedas Padam Divyam Kalait Abhideyate Bhuta Nahimna Dadinam Yato Binna Drisham Bhayam. He explains that in this world, everything is changing. Rupa Vedas Padam Divyam. Matter goes through various transformations. But who causes these transformations? Why a person goes through birth, youth, old age, disease, death? All these things are happening because of kala iti abhidhiyate. It is time. And because of this time, bhutanam nad adinam eto bhinna drishandayam. And people, because they are so obsessed, they do not see that there is time factor which is destroying them. And that because of this ignorance, what is the result? Yato binna drisham bhayam, fear. Now we see everywhere people are fearful, they are in anxiety, they are always in stress. This is one of the most popular seminars we have. That is, stress management is very, very popular. This fear, anxiety, stress is very common. Because you are not able to see how this, all these things are going to be destroyed by the time factor. So when a person is intelligent and realizes this, the effect of time, he becomes wise. He doesn't invest in those things which are temporary. And Kapila, in the next verse, he says, time is so powerful that time is creator, maintainer and destroyer. Of course, he is saying Lord Vishnu, and then in the end he says Lord Vishnu is actually appearing in the form of time. Yonanta pravishya bhutani bhutarat akilashaya sa vishnu akya deyagyoso kala kalayatam prabhu. Normally they say Brahma is creator, Vishnu is maintainer and Shiva is destroyer. But in this purport, Prabhupada very emphatically writes, O Lord Vishnu is himself creating, maintaining and destroying through the power of time. The same Vishnu enters everybody's heart as Paramatma and he annihilates every being, every being through another being. And then Kapila Dev, he concludes this chapter with a very powerful verse. He explains how time destroys everything and he uses a very nice poetic way he explains. Sonantantakra kalo anadiradikudavaya janjanina janayan marayan vittinantakam. He says this sense gratification is impeded because time, what does time do? Yonantantakra kalo, time is ananta.
Back in Prabhupada's room and he shut the door behind him. So I thought, now's the time. So I got Prabhupada's silver cup and I put ice in it and I opened the bottle, can of 7-Up, and I put 7-Up in Prabhupada's glass. So I went into the room and I opened the door, and as soon as I opened the door, this devotee came up to the door and he's grabbing for the cup, you know. And I said, no. I said, I'll bring it to him. And he's like, give it to me, I'll do it. And I'm like, no, it's my service. So I just grabbed it. So he just backed off. So I went in and Prabhupada's sitting behind his desk. So I came in and I put it down on his desk and he looked. He said, what's that? I said, oh, I said, it's 7-Up, Prabhupada. He said, oh. So he took the cup and put it to his mouth, started drinking, and he went, ah. He said, this is very refreshing. And this devotee sitting off in the side, and everyone would get totally bewildered seeing Prabhupada with the 7-Ups. And then Prabhupada stood up. He just, everything stopped, and he just stood up, and he picked up his cup. And he just stood there, and he started drinking his 7-Up, you know. And he started walking around the room, and he'd take a sip, and he'd stop, and he'd take another sip. And nothing, nobody talked. We were all just sitting there watching him, and he put it up to his lips. And so then he finished it. And I said, would you like any more, Prabhupada? He said, no. He said, that's okay. So I took the cup, and I walked by the devotee and gave him a dirty look, and I walked out of the room. I was so happy Prabhupada had a 7-Up. So then another day goes by, and it's a very hot day. Every day is so hot. And Bali Mardan, he was there. He was GBC, temple president, everything in New York. And he said, Prabhupada, he said, there's a property for us to look at. He said, and it's on Fifth Avenue. It's a big, beautiful cathedral. He said, and maybe we can get it. He said, we're trying to buy it. He said, would you like to see it? And Prabhupada said, yes, yes. So we left like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning in this little Toyota car, little four-door Toyota. And Kirti Raj was the driver, or godbrother, and Bali Mardan sat next to him, and Prabhupada and I sat in the back seat. And it just fit the four of us. It was just this tiny car, no air conditioning. And they drove, and I didn't know New York City at all, but we went to this very nice area in New York City, and he pulled across the street from a very big cathedral, Catholic church, with big, high, vaulted ceilings, and the doors were open, but he pulled across the street. And as we're getting out, he said, well, Prabhupada, he said, we can't go in, he said, because they don't know where Hare Krishna is, he said, so everything's very secretive at this point. He said, but I wanted you to see. So Prabhupada goes, okay, he said. And Prabhupada just looked inside, and he saw this long hallway, and all the pews were there, big chandeliers hanging down. And Prabhupada said, oh, he said, He said, we will call this Gauranga Hall. And Prabhupada already named the place. So we just looked for a few minutes, and now Prabhupada's back in New York City, right? This is where Prabhupada started the movement. So Prabhupada knew New York City somewhat. So now we're standing on the sidewalk, and Prabhupada's looking around, and he sees a little store, a little Italian grocery store behind him. And he looks at Kirtiraj, and he says, do they have 7 o'clock? Kirtiraj goes, what? He said, 7 up. He said, yes, 7 up. Do they have 7 up? And Kirtiraj says, yeah, I guess so, Prabhupada. He said, get me a 7 up. And he's like, what? He said, 7 up. He said, get me 7 up. So Kirtiraj, yes, Prabhupada. So, you know, we're all, of course, in Dodi's Kurtis, shaved head, tilak, 1973 in New York City. So Kirtiraj goes into the store. For a few minutes, he comes out with 1 can of 7 up. It's not very good. 1 can, there's 4 of us. And he opens the can and gives it to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada has his cane, and he's standing there in this on Fifth Avenue in New York City, and he's got his cane pushed into the ground, and he lifts up the can and he starts drinking his 7 up. And of course he brings it down and he goes, ah. So it's very refreshing, he said. And Bali Mardan and Kirtiraj are like amazed, Prabhupada's standing in center of New York City drinking a can of 7 up. So he takes a few sips and he says, okay, now we can go. So we all get into the car, and now I'm next to Prabhupada in the back seat again, and Kirtiraj is right in front of Prabhupada, the driver's seat. And Prabhupada takes a few more sips, and then he starts to hand it to me and says, okay, now you can take. So as soon as they hear him say it, Bali Mardan's reaching back to grab the can. Kirtiraj is reaching back to grab the can. So we're all fighting over this little bit of 7 up and Prabhupada in the can that Prabhupada left. So we shared it and we all took a sip. And then we went back to the temple. So a few days later, Prabhupada goes to Los Angeles. And we didn't have any 7 ups on the flight that day. So then he arrives in Los Angeles. Now, Prabhupada had his 7 up, his first 7 up, 3-4 days ago. So we get to Los Angeles, and as soon as we get into the room, Prabhupada's room, Kurunder, the GBC in Los Angeles, he said, Prabhupada, he said, all the devotees here are drinking 7 up. Los Angeles, New Dwarka was a big grihastha community, and there were many apartments, and everybody now had 7 up in their refrigerators, because they all, whenever Prabhupada would do anything, everybody knew about it all around the world. It's all we did was talk about Prabhupada, what Prabhupada did, especially if he did something as exotic as drink a 7 up. No one ever got up 2 o'clock in the morning when Prabhupada did, but when he took a 7 up, the whole world drank 7 up. But no one ever got up at 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning to do translating work, as Prabhupada did every day. So Prabhupada said, oh, he said, that's not good. He said, sometimes, he said, I'll drink a little 7 up, he said, for my digestion. He said, but it's not a good thing, he said, if the devotees start drinking 7 up. So, of course, that kind of stopped it a little bit. And so then one thing he would do, though, sometimes when he would fly, like that one trip we went from Los Angeles to Mexico City, and many devotees, it was a short flight, and some of the devotees from Mexico, they were with the Spanish BBT and they were in Los Angeles, so they traveled down as well to Mexico City. So when they were pushing the cart down and they're saying, you want anything? And Prabhupada said to the devotees, you can have 7 up. He told them all, you could have 7 up. So he would treat the devotees to 7 up in the airplanes. So then some years went by. So now, Srila Prabhupada, he's taking his last flight from Delhi to London. This was in September of 1977. Now, Prabhupada hasn't even eaten for weeks. And he's literally, his body was skin and bones. And he's going to London with the idea that maybe he would go and preach in the West and he would become very enlivened seeing his devotee preachers and he would want to preach. And so on that flight was Tumal Krishna and Abhiram and Guru Kripa. And they carried Prabhupada onto the plane. And Prabhupada laid in the center aisle in the airplane. There were four seats. So they all gave up their seats so Prabhupada could just lie there. And the plane was so full that none of them had any seats. They all just had to sit right in the aisle by the doors and things. So this plane stopped halfway. It stopped like in the Middle East somewhere. And Prabhupada, of course, he was in very serious condition at this time. And when the plane stopped in the Middle East, of course, then there were changes. People got on and off. So Prabhupada, he asked to sit up. So they sat Prabhupada up, and Guru Kripa sat up with Prabhupada, and he sat beside him. And Prabhupada was lying down and was drooling, coming down. And Guru Kripa, his heart, he said, was just breaking, seeing Srila Prabhupada going through all of this, so much difficulty, you know, and so much pain. And for us, so he said, Prabhupada, he said, is there anything I can do for you? And Prabhupada looked at him, and he had a big, big smile on his face. And he said, yes, he said, you can get me a 7-Up. So at that moment, Guru Kripa, he realized Prabhupada wasn't suffering. And Prabhupada, he was in ecstasy. Prabhupada was leaving us, and he had already gone. He was in complete ecstasy. In 1971, right, when Prabhupada was coming here, was it 1971? He didn't have his yellow fever card. And because he didn't, they put him in quarantine. So Prabhupada said he was being forced by Krishna to take some rest. They put him in this facility. It was a nice facility. And he was in his room there. But when the man came there, he told him, he said, it's not possible, he said, for a devotee to get any material disease. He said, when one is engaged in Krishna consciousness, 100%, he said, they can't be contaminated with any disease. He said, so it's not possible to have yellow fever. He told it to this man, Prabhupada. So Prabhupada, he was in ecstasy, but he wanted a 7-Up. So he drank a 7-Up. He hadn't been eating and drinking anything, but he saw he was on the airplane, so it was time for a 7-Up. So, on the way to New York City from London. To London. Oh, yeah. Okay. The first time was from London to New York. And the last time was going to London from Delhi. That was his last 7-Up. So, any questions? We can just go on. Yes, Michaela. What's good? Okay. So let me think. Where do we go? We can go, yes. A Brahmin thread. Yes. I was thinking we'll stay on the airplanes a little bit. Because we were in Australia. There was also, you know, it was so funny. When we arrived in Australia, what happened? we had to wait, right? We had to wait an hour to be picked up. There was no one at the airport. And I just remembered what it was like whenever Prabhupada flew to Australia. For some reason or another, there was no one at the airport. When the first time he went there, there were three people at the airport. And and Prabhupada arrived with three people. So he said, well, what has happened? And they had misinformation. And he said, well, how are we getting to the temple? So they got Prabhupada a cab to take him to the temple. So he arrived at the temple before the devotees did because they couldn't get their car out of the parking lot fast enough. So Prabhupada pulled up to the temple in a taxi cab with his entourage, and the devotees didn't even know Prabhupada was arriving. So this happened a few times in Australia. In 1975, when we arrived, I remember, at Melbourne Temple, and the same thing, we got to the temple, and then everyone, when Prabhupada left the airport, he was the first one back to the temple. So when he got to the temple, no one was there. They were all trailing behind from the airport, trying to get their cars out of the parking lot. So we got into the temple room, and Prabhupada sat in Vyasasana, and Paramahamsa played the murdunga and led the kirtan, and I played the kartels, and there was the two pujaris who were in the temple attending Srila Prabhupada. So there were five of us there as he arrived. So then when he left Melbourne, he had to go from Melbourne to Sydney, and he went to Fiji. So for some reason, things also didn't get together, and he didn't get prasadam in Melbourne. So they arranged that when he arrives in Sydney, they'll give him the Rajbhog offering, right? He'll get prasadam in Sydney. So we get to Sydney Airport, and now Prabhupada's in the transit lounge. So because he was in the transit lounge, Madhadvisa, who got there late with the deity plates because they had to wait for him to get off the altar, so they were also late. So Prabhupada's sitting, and he's there. Where is Madhadvisa with the prasadam? Of course, I'm saying, Prabhupada, I said, I don't know. And he said, he's supposed to be here with the prasadam. So a half hour goes by, and an hour goes by, and now they're telling everyone we have to get back onto the airplane. And just as we're ready to get on the airplane, Madhadvisa comes into the transit lounge, and he has the deity plates not even transferred. There's silver plates and silver bowls and silver cups. And he comes running and saying, Prabhupada, he said, I'm so sorry. He said they wouldn't let me into the transit lounge. And I had to wait for the plates to come off the altar. And what should I do? And Prabhupada just looked. He said, pointed to me. He said, take the plates, he said. So Prabhupada, we walk back onto the plane. And this is a big 747. And Prabhupada's in first class. And this was one of the first times. It's 1975, and it's the first time Srila Prabhupada was in the first class on an airplane. He was always in coach. We always sat himself, his secretary, his Sanskrit editor, his secretary. We were always in coach. But this time, Madhadvisa had gotten first-class tickets for Prabhupada and his servant. So we get onto the plane, and it's a big 747 now, and Prabhupada's seat and my seat, we were the very first two seats in the whole airplane, and it was very roomy, this first class compartment. There's so much room, and the seats were very big. And so Prabhupada gets on, and he has that pink coat, his saffron coat with the peacock tassels and the furry, fake furry hood on it, and walks onto the airplane, and I'm walking behind him carrying silver plates. And Prabhupada, stewardess directs him to the seat, so Prabhupada takes off his coat, and the stewardess takes his coat, and she says, I'll take care of it, and she hangs it up, and Prabhupada sits down, and he said, okay, he said, give me my prasadam. So I sit down next to Prabhupada, and I get this table, and I put these silver plates, the deity's plates, right in front of Prabhupada. So other people are getting on. This flight's going to take off in 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and people are getting on and sitting down, and stewardess, and everyone, of course, is looking, but no one is saying anything. You know, and Prabhupada, of course, again, we're devotees shaved heads, tilak, and this was in first class, so they're a little more courteous to you in first class than in the back of the plane. You know? So Prabhupada just starts taking prasadam. Now, he always took prasadam on a plane, but this was the first time he ever took prasadam while the plane is still on the ground. So he just starts eating because it was time for prasadam. And he's taking and chewing, and all of a sudden the plane starts moving back from taxiing, you know, and it's moving back to get on the runway, and it's moving backwards, and then it gets onto the straightaway, and it starts moving forwards, and I grab Prabhupada's glasses because everything's shaking, the plane's starting to shake, and holding Prabhupada's, and Prabhupada's not looking at anyone, not looking at me, not look, and he's just taking prasadam, and sometimes he would grab the cup with the water in it and take a little sip and put it back, and I'd grab it, and then we'll fasten our seatbelts, and the plane takes off, and the plane's taking off, and I've got my seatbelt on, and I'm leaning over, and I'm holding the glasses, and Prabhupada's just honoring prasadam like nothing else, like he was sitting in his room, you know, staring at the wall. He would always eat with the wall in front of him, and he's just like he's in his room, and he's honoring prasadam, and the plane's shaking, and everything's shaking, and Prabhupada's just very happily taking prasadam. So then it levels off, and he's going on, and he's eating, and then after everything's all calmed down, then he says, okay, he said, I'm finished. So I got his plates, and I just started to move them over to my table, and of course, immediately, this stewardess comes up in the first class department there, and she said, would you like me to clean them for you? So I thought, oh, that's great, and I said, sure. So she takes the plates, and she goes up. There was this little circular, there was a second floor on the airplane in the 747, so she goes up the stairs, and I'm watching, and she goes up and goes into, I guess, a galley. So then the whole flight went on, and we arrive in Fiji like 2 hours later, and we're getting off of the plane. And as we're getting off, she said, here's the plates. And she had everything in a bag, and she handed me. And I said, oh, thank you. I'd forgotten about them. Because I never had silver plates on a plane before. And I take the bag, and Prabhupada looks at me. He said, what happened to the remnants? And I just, my heart just dropped. And I realized she just threw out all of Prabhupada's remnants. And they were my remnants. They were for me. That's what I should have eaten. And instead, I let her wash the plate. So Prabhupada just looked at me. And he didn't even yell. He just looked at me. And he gave me that look. And that was worse than getting yelled at. Getting yelled at was nice. But he just looked at me. And I thought, oh, I really made a big mistake. So then we we get into Fiji. By the time we get into Fiji, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. On this was another time maybe. And we pull into Fiji from a plane. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. And it's Paramahamsa and myself and Srila Prabhupada. And we stayed at one life member's house at that time. This was before there was any temple. And it was a codicil when we got there. But they had prepared this big feast for Srila Prabhupada and his disciples as we were coming. And of course, it was all grains. You know, everything was there, puris and halva and rice and sabjis. And so we're there. Paramahamsa says, Prabhupada, it's a codicil. And Prabhupada just looks. He says, that's okay. He said, just take prasadam. So we all sat down, but now by the time we're eating, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and we're taking this big feast at 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's a codicil on top of it. So then after that, we take rest, and of course, 6 o'clock in the morning, Prabhupada's ready to go in his morning walk. He already did his translating 2 hours before. So now we get up. Go on the morning walk, and now we've changed time zones, 4 or 5 time zones, and maybe 8 hours in the last 1 week. So we get up and we go on the morning walk, and then Prabhupada gets back and has a little class in his room, and then we all have breakfast. So now we had eaten at 2 o'clock in the morning, so now again it's 9 o'clock in the morning and we have breakfast, and Prabhupada eats, and Paramahamsa and I, we have a nice big breakfast. And then we're just thinking, maybe Prabhupada will take rest because of all this change. So Prabhupada took rest. So as soon as Prabhupada took rest, Paramahamsa and I are like, yeah, let's take rest. So we just laid down and we just fell asleep, you know. And within 10 minutes, we're sound asleep. So eventually I heard a bell. And I went into Prabhupada's room. And now I'm I had been sleeping. So I go in and I offer obeisances. And Prabhupada looked at me. And he said, which he would say, I've been ringing this bell for hours, he said. And he said, it's morning, he said, why are you sleeping? And the one thing I learned very early was never give an excuse to Prabhupada. There's no such thing as an excuse. So I said, Prabhupada, he said, he would say, like dead men, sleeping like dead men. He said, where is Paramahamsa? He's in the room, Prabhupada. He said, what is he doing? I said, oh, he's resting, Prabhupada. He said, call him. So I thought, oh no. So I went and I said, Paramahamsa, Prabhupada wants to see you. I said, and he's really mad. And Paramahamsa goes, oh no, he said. So he goes in and offers obeisances, and Prabhupada immediately, why are you sleeping? He said. And Paramahamsa said, well, Prabhupada, we got in so late last night, and he said, jet lag. He mentioned jet lag to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada looked at him. He said, you're a sannyasi. He said, your business is to reduce sleeping and eating. He said, what are you doing sleeping? And then Paramahamsa, he just became quiet. He said, a sannyasi is for eating less and sleeping less. So Paramahamsa, yes, Prabhupada. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada said, go on, you know. So then we both left. I would go in, I always went in for this as well, so Paramahamsa. So then we both left the room. Then Prabhupada later, he would bring us back into the room and he would tell us some stories. That's how Prabhupada would let us know that he loved us. He was just trying to keep us from falling down into Maya's clutches. So he would tell us, very often he would tell you stories about his childhood, where he would talk about Krishna, and sometimes he would ask you to read from his books, and he would say, this is how we do something positive. So then while we were there, then the next day, this man, he took Prabhupada to his store. He had a store. He wanted Prabhupada's blessings. Huh? Go to the store, bring the Swamiji to the store to bless his store. So Paramahamsa and I, we accompanied the four of us, we went into the car. So this store was a jewelry store. So one thing, as I said, when we were in ISKCON in 1975, it was funny, when I was in Australia, I met my godbrother Pratapana, and he was with the Namhatta party. They were in Japan. This was Guru Kripa's party. So they were very famous. They actually started a movement in ISKCON of acquiring very nice watches. Because devotees, we didn't have any possessions. And as all you could wear were dhotis and kurtas, you know. And sometimes you would wear a vest if you were really had been to India. Then you would get a vest. But we never had any possessions. But the one thing you could do was get a watch. So you could have very fancy watch if you were fortunate. So these became very popular back in around 1975. So especially even brahmacharis, they would have nice Seiko watches, and most of these were coming from Japan. And even they had Rolex watches. And this was the best. These watches, they could cost sometimes $5,000, sometimes $10,000, and they would have diamonds in them. So even some of the sannyasis were wearing these watches, these Rolex watches. So Paramahamsa and I, we were also desirous for like a Rolex watch. So when we thought we had a really good way of getting one because we were with Prabhupada. So now as the movement's growing, and sometimes people would say, what does Prabhupada need? So our mantra became, well, he could use a new watch. And you could get him a Rolex watch. Because we knew Prabhupada, he was always giving away his rings, his watches. He would get one watch, he would give the other watch away. So we thought, if Prabhupada got a Rolex watch, maybe eventually we could have his Rolex watch. So now we're walking into this store, and it's a jewelry store. So as soon as we go in, and Prabhupada's standing by the counter, and this Indian gentleman goes behind the counter, and he's showing Prabhupada his store, and it's a very fancy store. And he says, Prabhupada, he said, let me give you something, please. And Prabhupada said, no. He said, it's okay. And he said, no, please. He said, let me give you something. And he walks up to the counter where Prabhupada is, and he said, please, I can give you a watch. And Paramahamsa and I are on the side, and we look down, and you know what they were. They were Rolex watches. And he said, please, let me give you this watch. And Prabhupada said, no, thank you. He said, I have a watch. And he shows him his watch. And he said, no, please. He said, Swamiji, let me. He said, I want to give you one watch. Please let me give you a watch. He said, any watch. He said, whatever one you want, please take it. And Prabhupada kept saying, no. He said, that's okay. I have a watch. And Paramahamsa and I, we were dying over on the side. Praying, we're praying, Krishna, please let Prabhupada take this watch. Please take a watch. Please, it'll benefit the man. Take the watch. And again, he said, take any watch, please. I want to give you a watch. And Prabhupada said, no. He said, I'm okay. He said, I have a watch. So Prabhupada, of course, he knew what we were doing off on the side there. So he was showing us how we just want Krishna. Don't want anything else, no watches. Again, it's desire. What do you desire? You can desire Krishna, you can desire nice cars and watches and nice place to live and work so hard. And you can get all those things. You can get anything, especially if you chant Hare Krishna. But if you want Krishna, then all these other desires, you have to give them up. And you can't get Krishna any other way. So Prabhupada was always showing us, teaching us in so many ways, whether it was eating too much, sleeping too much. You know, in Vrindavan, when Gurudas, this was also during Kartik of 1972, and Prabhupada was talking about becoming, one has to be so careful to become Krishna conscious. He said, just like here in Vrindavan, all these animals, he said, just like the monkeys, he said, they're taking their birth here because in their last life, he said, they were devotees, but they wanted to engage in sex life. So they come back as a monkey. He said, in the hogs, he said, they want to eat so much. He said, so then they come back as a hog in Vrindavan. And Gurudas, he said, well, Prabhupada, he said, what about, he said, the sadhus? He said, they live along the Jamuna. He said, and they're smoking ganja. And Prabhupada said, oh, he said, they come back as hippies in San Francisco. Where did Gurudas come from? He was a hippie in San Francisco. Prabhupada always knew just what to say. Just like, it didn't take a moment. Prabhupada could always say the perfect thing. And it could be so funny, but it could also be very profound. He would make such wonderful statements. So he just laughed. And Gurudas, of course, he laughed and thought, ooh. We have to be so careful, huh? Mm-hmm. So, any questions? Anything? Nothing. Should we go on? Yeah. Okay. No questions? Okay. We'll go one last story then. Mekla says airport story. This is, since we're in the airport, airport was so special. Actually, the most wonderful thing for the devotees, we always love airports, because I think part of it is because you would always see Prabhupada, just like now. Prabhupada was coming. We would all be at the airport, every one of us, and another few thousand, if they let us nowadays. We would all be at the airport waiting for Prabhupada to get off the plane. This is what happened all the time. Imagine Prabhupada's traveling around the world 15 times in 10 years. Imagine how many airports Prabhupada stopped in. How many times devotees were in these airports at the gate just waiting to see Prabhupada. Just, he was our life and soul, just serving Prabhupada and hoping just to see him. Just one glance and your whole life would be a success. Huh? Just one glance by Srila Prabhupada. So I had a strange position because I never saw Prabhupada arrive at the airport, because every time I was at the airport, I was behind Prabhupada. I was always with him. So I never had that opportunity to be involved in what was one of the most ecstatic moments in life, was seeing Prabhupada arrive at the airport. And Prabhupada was also, would be in ecstasy to see his disciples. And he would prepare himself. And they say, we know on the airplanes, Prabhupada was so amazing, and he was so aloof from everything. So wherever we were going, of course, Prabhupada would always get garlands as he left, very wonderful garlands. There would be gardenias and roses and sometimes big magnolia flowers and just very fragrant flowers. So then as soon as we were approaching a city like Los Angeles, and then they would say, okay, everyone get in your seat, fasten the seatbelt sign would go on, and everyone return to your seat, we're going into, you know, descent. So as soon as they said that, Prabhupada would get up and he would go to the bathroom. That was his call, to go to the bathroom. So Prabhupada would get up and then I would get up, because I always, wherever Prabhupada went, I just followed him. So I would follow him, and then the stewardess or somebody would say, hey, you have to sit down. And Prabhupada, he would just ignore them. He could always act like he didn't understand English. And one time he looked at me and he just laughed. He said, when you're an old man, you can do anything you want, he said. So he just walked with his head held up, and he would, and the plane's going like this, you know, and I'm following him. So then he'd go in and I'd stand at the door faithfully and wait for Prabhupada to come out, and then take his hand, and we'd walk back, and then we'd sit down, and Prabhupada would put on fresh tilak, so, because he was soon, everyone was going to see him, so he would put tilak on, and then the plane would land, and as soon as we stood up, he'd say, get the garlands. So I'd get garlands, there'd be maybe 3, 4, 5 garlands, and Prabhupada would point. So then I'd put that garland on him, and then he would fix the garland, and then he would fix his bead bag in front of him like that. He would position his bead bag, and then he'd say, the other garlands. So we would all put garlands on. Shamasundar, myself, Prajumna. So now the plane lands, and you can already hear the kirtan. Even the doors haven't opened yet, but everyone's at the gate waiting for Prabhupada. And you can just hear the chanting. And Prabhupada, he's just sitting. And you know Prabhupada's just in ecstasy to be around all these devotees. Prabhupada just, he created a whole world of Vaishnavas. Just a whole world of Vaishnavas. He created it. It wasn't there. It just didn't exist anywhere. And in a few years, they were everywhere. So finally the door opens and now you can hear the chanting. And they're also getting louder and louder, you know, because they know Prabhupada's, they see the plane come in. They figure they've already been there an hour having a kirtan. And then when they see the plane land, everyone just starts going crazy. And there might be 10 murdungas and 20 sets of cartels and wampers and in the airport. And everybody's... This is why everyone knew Hare Krishnas. There were just a few thousand around the whole world. But the whole world knew us because we were just everywhere making a lot of noise. And then people would start to walk out, right, down that little corridor thing, and they would start to see people. So as soon as they start to see people, now they're really hearts racing, right, their blood's flowing, and now they're really starting to go crazy, and the kirtan's becoming more and more ecstatic, and people are jumping up and down, and now they have to wait. And Prabhupada's in the coach, so, you know, half the people are going to leave usually before. So people are walking out and walking out. And every time they see a person, they know one's going to be Prabhupada. So then Prabhupada, and he also never walked behind anyone. Like, so if people were walking, Prabhupada would leave 5 feet, 10 feet. He wasn't going to walk behind someone. Because he also knew everyone was there. Prabhupada just did everything perfectly. Just always knew just what to do. So then even when there's spaces, they're getting excited because they know there's going to be a space before Prabhupada comes out. And you could almost tell, even though I've never seen it, I'm on the other side, I just know what was going on. And finally, and Prabhupada, he would just be so blissful and so effulgent. And everything was effulgent. His cloth was effulgent. His garlands were effulgent. His tilak looked effulgent. His face, his whole body was just effulgent. His saffron cloth was... Everything sparkled on Prabhupada. So finally, they would see him. Then that was it. Then it just became madness, and everyone would be falling down on the ground, and some people in the doing the kirtan, they would just be jumping up and down and banging on the drums faster and louder, and Prabhupada, Prabhupada, and Prabhupada would just have this beautiful smile for everyone. He was just so happy. He would see all his disciples, all his children. And he would come out, and he would walk slowly and just look and smile. And everyone was in ecstasy. So that particular day, when everyone was in ecstasy, and I didn't feel anything inside of me at all, I just felt dry. And because I did, I felt so bad. I was right behind Prabhupada, and there's just waves, just an ocean of bliss. And I was just sitting on the shore and I couldn't feel any of it. So then it just continued on and everyone's marching with Prabhupada as he walks down, and I have a white bag in one hand and another bag in another hand, and I'm walking right next to Prabhupada, right with everyone. And they're all jumping up and down and chanting and dancing. And I just felt horrible. So then we went to the temple in Los Angeles at New Dwarka. And it's like 11 o'clock in the morning, so I bring the bags, and now I have the bags, and I have so many things to do, and Prabhupada's going to have his massage very soon, and I have to make his cooker up. So I'm doing all these things, getting everything ready. And then I bring Prabhupada's gamcha in. He puts his gamcha on, and I start giving him massage. And I just felt, I had never felt so bad, especially after seeing all of my godbrothers and godsisters being so happy, and I thought, something's wrong with me. So I'm massaging Prabhupada, and I massage his head, and I massage his back, And finally, I couldn't take it, and I said, Prabhupada, I said, all your disciples, they have so much love for you. I said, when they see you, I said, they're all jumping up and down in ecstasy. I said, you can see it. I said, I don't feel any of that. And I'm massaging Prabhupada as I'm talking to him. And Prabhupada didn't say anything. He just remained quiet. So then I thought, wow, now I was really in trouble. Now I had revealed that I was just in complete maya to Prabhupada. And I was hoping he would say something to make me feel better. But he didn't say anything. He just sat there. And the whole massage now went on, an hour and a half. I'm rubbing and rubbing and rubbing his legs and squeezing his legs and pulling his toes and his fingers. And he just sat there the whole time. And I thought, oh, this is not good. And I just felt so bad. And now I felt even worse. So then the massage was finished and Prabhupada got up and just put some oil in the palm of his hand, some mustard oil. He would put oil in his gates, in his ears, his nostrils, and he just walked off to take his bath. So now I had to arrange all the clothes on the bed, and I put the tilak out on his table, and I run into the kitchen, and I had to take the cooker apart and chaunch the sabjis and the dal and roll chapatis, make his plate up. So I'm doing all these things, and I'm a little bit distracted now because that was my busiest time of the day. So then I bring the plates in, and just as Prabhupada's finishing Gayatri Mantra, you're bringing him his lunch prasadam. So that was perfect. And Prabhupada would just sit on the floor on a little straw mat, and he had the table just a few inches, and he would just face the wall in his bedroom right next to his bed, and he would start eating. And I'd offer obeisances, and I'd run back into the kitchen and roll another chapati, and it puff up, and you put a little ghee on the top, and you put it on a plate, and you run back in, and then I slide it onto his plate and offer obeisances, and then you run back out of the room, you roll another chapati, and you do the same, and you bring it in, and you do that 4 or 5 times until he says, no more. So I bring him 4 or 5 chapatis, and he still hasn't said one word to me. So I go back to my room, and after 10 minutes or so, Prabhupada comes out, and he would go to the bathroom. So then I go in the room, and I get his plates, and then I transfer all the maha onto another plates, and then I wash his plates, and then I go out, and I distribute all his remnants. And then Prabhupada took rest, so I went back to my room, and I'm just sitting there. So I'm just totally disturbed. So then another hour goes by, and then Prabhupada rings his bell. So I jump up and I run into the room and I offer obeisances. And I sat up and I said, yes, Prabhupada, because he would always have something for me to do. And he just looked at me. He said, do you like your service? And I said, oh, yes, Prabhupada, very much. And he said, service is love. He said, that's what love is, service. He said, everyone, they can be jumping up and down. He said, that's very nice. He said, but service is love. He said, just keep doing your service, he said. He said, and everything will be all right. So then I said, thank you, Prabhupada. Yeah, I offered obeisances and I left. And then I felt fine. So Prabhupada was very kind. And then I jumped up and down the next day at the kirtan. So I started jumping up and down as well. Prabhupada, he knew just how to fan that flame for everyone. And he was so kind. So I think we should stop here, Maharaj. Hare Krishna. So again, it's very wonderful. My wife and I were so happy to complete our trip around the world by ending here. And we hope, Maharaj, you start your trip around the world by coming to our place when you arrive in England, and then we'll feel happy. And I hope to see you all again very soon. We think we'll be back around November-ish, somewhere in there. So until then, you just continue as you're doing, and you inspire us all very much. And we just thank you, and we love you all. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.